place to be nation. Welcome back. Join us once again on the highway to the impact zone. I am your host, Logan Crosland, and I would like to thank you for joining us for episode number 34, where we will be discussing the April 15th and the April 22nd episodes of Impact. Let me now welcome in my co-host and student, making his return after missing our last episode, Jake Williams. How you doing, Jake?
I'm well. It's nice to be back. I'm a little disappointed that my streak ended before Jeff Jarrett's title reign ended, which is unfortunate, but I guess it was going to happen eventually because I don't think he's ever going to lose the title, but I am happy to be back and to be on the precipice of lockdown, as we're going to speak about tonight.
Yeah, I got you. You almost made it. It's we're on the cusp of it. So you came just so short. but we definitely missed you last time, but we understand that have things happen through nature, so you know we understood why you couldn't be with us last time. But now let us bring in our experts. First, he is captain of the Chicken Salad Express, and he's the guy who was so rejuvenated by NXT 2.0 the other night, he wants to now be referred to as Ben 2.0. Ben Locke, how you doing?
2.0. Oh, I'm very well. You know, it's just the NXT thing's just a whole rant for a whole other podcast. I'll get into that another time. But yes, I'm very, very well. And all I'll say is 34 episodes. It's a long time.
Without a doubt. But secondly, he's my best pal, and he's the guy who I had to perform CPR on multiple times during the All Out pay-per-view. Lewis Maynard, how you doing, Lewis?
I'm slowly recovering. I'm getting function back in my limbs. Blood is now flowing to the correct places after that AEW pay-per-view, and I think I'm good to go for the next one.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, I had to resuscitate him just a few times, but he recovered throughout the night, and he's still doing a bit of recovery, but he'll be all right.
Lewis is going to be all out for Grand Slam then.
More than likely.
All out.
All right, well, I don't usually ask Jake this because he's usually on every episode with us, but Jake, what'd you just think of the episodes we discussed last time?
Yes, I was able to watch them despite not being able to do the pod. And I was kind of in lockstep with you guys, like you talked about in the last episode. It was as typical on these Impacts. I didn't think they did a amazing job of building to the pay-per-view, aside from just kind of telling us the matches that were coming up. But like you guys mentioned, I did think they did a little bit better with the presentation on Impact and giving the matches a little bit more time to breathe. And I think we see this sometimes on these tapings where they obviously like take these in batches, where if you can get some episodes where like all the X division is kind of crammed into a couple episodes, that kind of helps too, which I think happened on the last set. And so that helped. And just, I felt like some of the matches got a little more time to breathe. So from an in-ring perspective, I thought you got a few pretty good things on there. But again, they still haven't really figured out how to build to these shows in any kind of, like when I'm watching these, I rarely feel like I'm locked into some great feud or the way it's being presented is really pushing me towards the pay-per-view in that aspect. It's really all the in-ring action is kind of what draws you towards the pay-per-view.
Yeah, I definitely think you're right. And yet they are getting a little bit better with time management, but you know, that they'll still have episodes where it's a little wacky, but yeah, I think they're definitely improving somewhat, but hopefully they'll continue to build on that as we go. But Ben, what'd you think about what we discussed last time?
Yeah, I agree. Jake's made a really good point actually, because you know, we've been talking a little bit there about AEW and even takeovers, like they know how to get people to watch the big shows, and like TNA, I mean, they're only like 6 months into this pay-per-view model, but they haven't figured out how to get, they've got the wrestlers, but they've not figured out how to do the angles with it. So, and then the production, like I think you guys mentioned last time, like that X-Vision match, the four-way was a great little match, but when you've told everybody the result literally 20 minutes before, are you really going to bother shooting and carry on watching? You probably aren't, are you? But I feel both shows were perfectly fine placeholder shows, but you expect a bit more in what's going to be quite a major pay-per-view.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely agree with you. Lewis, what'd you think?
I mean, honestly, like the most exciting stuff for me in these like most recent weeks and the like two shows we're about to do is the Chris Candido stuff. Like that is funny to me, and that is the only thing I'm actually invested in and having a good time with on these shows leading up to lockdown. And like, so like the premise, like they go, okay, every match at lockdown is going to be inside the cage. And I'm like, okay, that could be kind of cool. It's going to be interesting to see how they take certain matches where they're like not all doing the same spots. And they would get things like the Lord of Darkness or Prince of Darkness, whatever it's called, match where it's just they're going to be blindfolded. Okay, that's not going to be good. Then we're gonna have the X Division match. I think it's announced tonight, or if it was announced in the previous shows, I didn't catch that. That the loser is the last person in the cage. Okay, so what happens to that person? Is he fired or suspended? What happens with the other winners? What do they get out of that? Like, just like Ben was saying, like the build to the show, like. It's cool that every match is going to be inside the cage, but when you have to throw like some stupid, weird stipulations into it, I'm not excited to see a blindfolded match. I'm not excited to see like everyone escaping the cage and then the last person ends the loser. It's just weird.
Yeah, I was just saying their stipulations are probably going to be a little weird part of our next episode, you know, going through that. But there's a few storylines that have caught that we're going to look forward to going towards. You know, AJ and Abyss. This feud might not be the greatest, but the match is something to look forward to.
It's interesting to me. Like, I'm excited to see AJ and Abyss. I'm excited to see Raven versus Jeff. So that stuff has me hooked.
Yeah, I got you. And you know, like, as much as we've gotten on Skipper, I think Skipper Daniels will probably be pretty good. But, there's a couple of wacky stipulations there for sure. I definitely agree with you. We'll go on into the April 15th episode, which will be our first episode for tonight. We open this episode with highlights from last week's Jarrett promo and DDP jumping him afterwards. We are then welcomed into the Impact Zone by Tanay. He tells us that tonight, DDP and Sean Waltman will take on the Outlaw and Monty Brown in our main event. So that'll be our main event for tonight. And then we go into our first match for the night, and it's going to be Michael Shane, Kid Cash, Lance Hoyt, and they're going to be taking on Chris Sabin, Apollo, and Sonny Siaki. Michael Shane and Chris Sabin start things out. Shane does some heel stalling to draw some crowd heat. Sabin finally charges after him, but Shane ducks and slaps him. Sabin then chases him, trying to catch him around the ring, but Shane actually tags out to Cash. Cash then charges and immediately gets taken down. After a brief back and forth, Sabin scores with a dropkick and a deep arm drag. Sabin then tags in Siaki. Then they both do a double-team arm drag to Cash and Shane. Siaki then temporarily works the arm before Cash pokes him in the eye and tags Michael Shane back in. Siaki then scores with a dropkick as soon as Shane gets in the ring. Siaki then scores with a big gorilla press into a power slam. I thought that was a pretty impressive move for Siaki to pull out. Siaki then runs up against the ropes, but Cash gets a boot to his back, followed by Hoyt getting a shot in as well. Hoyt is then tagged in and uses his power to kind of continue to wear down Siaki. This is the point where we go to commercial, get a lockdown ad. We come back from commercial, and Hoyt is going for a moonsault from the top rope and completely misses. Hoyt then gets the tag to Cash, but Siaki also tags in Apollo. Apollo comes in with a big clothesline after big clothesline. Sabin also comes in and kind of takes out Michael Shane. Apollo then hits his little sit-out spinebuster that he does and goes for the pin on Cash, but Hoyt actually gets a boot in on time. Apollo then does his best to ward off Hoyt and Cash, but they are just too much as Hoyt hits a sit-out powerbomb, and Cash follows it with a frog splash to get the victory. This is actually Kid Cash's last match and appearance with us. So, Jake, what did you think of the match? And what are your memories of Cash? And tell us how much you'll miss him.
I will definitely miss him. I thought this is a pretty solid little match. Speaking of Cash, I thought he was kind of the glue to this match. Kind of held it together. So for sort of a throwaway match, I thought he shined pretty well in this. And I liked what he did in the finish. I liked the little... little kind of double team finisher thing that they did was pretty cool. It flowed well. I thought Sabin was pretty good in his brief spots that he was in here. He wasn't featured a whole lot in here. It was, you know, a lot of Apollo looking unimpressive as usual. he did that springboard thing that was, and I know a lot of times stuff like that is usually not really needed, but to me it was just really egregious. Like, he literally just did like a weird flip thing off the ropes that led to absolutely nothing. Like, he was just trying to show that he can do a flip, I guess, that he actually can do something, but it wasn't impressive. I felt like that Hoyt moonsault was cool looking, but like, it definitely looked like a moonsault that he had no intention of hitting. He was just trying to show that he could, kind of like Apollo doing his little springboard thing. He was trying to show that he could do it, but it never looked like he was really trying to hit it. He went like so straight up and down with it. It looked kind of weird, but it was impressive as an athletic feat. But yeah, I thought this was a fine enough little opening match. I went 2 stars on it. I will definitely miss Cash for his in-ring ability and the ridiculous shit he says, because he's a bit of a he kind of puts his foot in his mouth a lot, which I kind of like. He's a shitbag heel that I like. And yeah, it kind of sucks that he's going to be gone. He's a good sort of veteran presence on these shows when we've seen a lot of not good veteran presence in TNA. So it's going to be a bummer. I didn't really know that until you mentioned it, Logan, that this was kind of his you know, his exit point. So that's a little bit sad.
Yeah, Matt brought it to my attention last episode. I didn't realize he was going out as quickly as he did either. But yeah, he's about to make the jump to WWE at this point. So, but Ben, what did you think of the match? And give us a little memorial on Cash, I guess.
A memorial? Oh God. Okay.
Well, that's not the wrong word. You know what I mean?
So I'll start with my rating first, and I work backwards. So I gave the match 2 stars as well, but I thought when you see these 6 guys on paper, you think this is going to be like a really good, like, it's not even going to be high flying so much because of Cash, like you say, is the glue when he sticks all together. But considering the talent level that's in this match, they should be doing a lot more than, you know, 2 stars. But literally, it's a 6-minute match with 2 minutes of it being a headlock and stalling. You know, I just wasn't feeling it in that first bit. But I did like that Don was playing out his best Bobby Heenan line, saying that everybody in the airport was asking him about lockdown already, which, you know, that filled my heart with glee, I'm not going to lie. And also, I know that we've all picked up on the fact that Apollo is using Great Value Santana as his theme music. That song now has lyrics, Logan. I don't know if you picked up on the lyrics.
I did not hear the lyrics.
Sadly, I didn't either. I was hoping somebody might have caught them because they would have been beautiful. As for Cash, yeah, it's gonna be quite a sad loss because, you know, him and, you know, he should be like the number one of the best heels in the whole brand. But yes, I'm gonna very much miss him from this company. It's a very sad thing.
Yeah, definitely. His theme song's probably sleek instead of smooth. It's probably you're so sleek instead. But Lewis, what'd you think of the match? And give us your thoughts on Cash leaving.
For the match itself, I went a little higher. I went 2.25 on it, just because I'm like, one thing TNA does really good is their heel tag teams just doing shitlord stuff in the corner during matches, and like just taking cheap shots all the time. So I really enjoyed that aspect of it. And then I thought the finish was pretty cool with that sit down powerbomb and then the frog splash. And yeah, I'm gonna miss Cash because he is, like, as far as the heels and TNA goes, he's one of the best, and like just so easy to hate because he has such a punchable face, and he has Lance Hoyt behind him just being the big tough guy. So yeah, I'm gonna miss him. And yeah, I once you said that, I did realize that this was the point where he goes over to WWE and he does the, I think it's like he does the Pit Bulls thing with Jamie right. Noble. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think he gets the Cruiserweight title at some point during that run too. So good for you, Cash, getting back up into the major leagues.
Debut at One Night Stand. So it's only a couple of months after this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think he does the Cruiserweight title run first, and then him and Jamie hook up and kind of take on London and Kendrick in like 06 and stuff like that when they're the tag champs. So
I'll have to go back and see if he had any fun promos in his WWE run here.
I'm going to go on a limb and say they weren't as fun as the ones we went through throughout this pod so far. But yeah, Cash will be dearly missed. Yeah, just his zany promos that he comes out with, the words that he somehow created without meaning to. Yeah. We're always funny. We'll always have crumpany.
And now we get to see Let's Hoyt shine on his own a little.
Yep, and kill Chris Candido and in the next show. I'm just playing.
Hey, he's the murder hawk for a reason.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, that statement doesn't have a leg to stand on. Oh, I'm sorry. For the match, I'll go 2 stars as well. I thought it was a pretty solid opener, like y'all said. Cash held it together. Not Dallas, Hoyt going for the moonsault was a pretty impressive feat. I was kind of surprised he could make the rotation. Much more impressive than what Apollo did, whatever the hell that was supposed to be. But I thought the fact that he pulled out that moonsault was pretty cool. But I thought it was a pretty solid opener to start the show, and Cash shined in his final moment. So
I'm not sure if you meant to do that, but you just said feet right after your leg joke. It was quite a feat.
I totally meant to say that.
It's going
to
be Sean's favorite show.
For real. But after this, the lawyer Daggert comes out, and he's with Candido, actually. They're both out, and Candido's actually in a wheelchair with a neck brace on his neck and his arm in a sling. Daggert then cuts a promo about Nash assaulting Candido last week, and it says if he's seen in the building, he will be immediately removed by all of the security that he and Jared have hired. So Candido working a fake injury angle, and which is the most ironic thing in the world. But after this, we go to the back, and Michael Shane is with Trinity. She's telling him that he's got it going on, and that the X Division title would look real good around his waist. Tracy then comes in and tells Trinity she needs to get back to going around handing out Dusty's new book, which she had holding in her hand the whole time, kind of showing it to the camera, which was kind of a ridiculous, just advertising little, hey, look, there's this thing that I'm holding in my arms, you know. Lewis, what'd you think of the Daggert and Candido thing in the Shane Trinity backstage segment?
Yeah, like I said at the beginning of the show, I don't know why I enjoy Candido and his little neck brace so much, but Candido's one of those guys with like the fat face, so it kind of squeezes into the neck brace in just a fun way. And yeah, it just reminds me of like the Kurt Angle shit when he was in the wheelchair, the Miz stuff he's been doing recently in the wheelchair. Like when just funny heels are put in a wheelchair, I enjoy it. Especially when they like can sell it as much as Candido is there, just crying in the neck brace.
Yeah, I really enjoy Candido here for sure.
The book stuff, yeah, that was shameless plug. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, yeah, that's about right. You would have to be giving away copies of Dusty's book.
Yeah, that's probably true. Ben, what do you think?
Okay, I need to ask a question because I don't know if it's been established yet. Does Daggert have a first name, or is it Lawyer?
Yeah, it's just Lawyer Daggert.
That's literally what they call him, so I think he's just Lawyer.
Lawyer Daggert. Boy.
Daggert is the greatest name ever. And then I've decided as well I'm going to keep a track of Don West's shirt, so very disappointing somber black shirt tonight, but, you know, He'll up his game. I don't know if you caught it, but Dusty's apparently got a book out.
I barely caught it, but I caught it.
They don't mention it that often.
No, not more than once. Definitely not.
And like, so here's the thing with the book. If you're gonna shamelessly plug it, you could have like Dusty sitting at a table with like a line of fans signing copies of it, so it actually looks like people have interest in it, instead of Trinity trying to hand out a free copy, one free copy backstage.
Yeah, it's not like she was sitting next to a stack. She had fucking one book in her arms.
Yeah, like that could have been done in a still shameless but somewhat more, hey, people actually want to read this book way.
Mm-hmm. Jake, what did you think of it? Oh, go ahead, Ben. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm looking on Amazon as we speak, and apparently you can get the Kindle edition for $7.99, or paperback $22.67, or hardcover
£6.83.
What? I want y'all to know what your Christmas presents are going to be this year. It will be Dusty's book. I'm telling you this now.
How are they still charging $22 for that?
And it's ranked 851,015
of wrestler books.
364 in wrestling.
364, not bad.
364 Kindle store, 1,199 wrestling books.
That Jericho's new book's number one right now.
I hope the audio book is someone just doing a really poor, dusty impression reading the entire book.
Oh my god! Oh, that would be amazing.
So they all was in Texas.
We gotta track that down.
But yeah, the you know, the dusty book stuff was goofy, and it made me think from the last match too, and then along with this, like how far Shane's stock has fallen since you know, him and Kaz are kind of on the downswing anyway, but now that Kaz has left, he's really just an afterthought. I mean, he's just a hair above guys like Mikey Batts or something at this point. Like, he's really not doing a whole lot. And it's weird because when we first started the podcast, it seemed like he and Kaz are sort of like, they were kind of presenting them like they were going to be the next kind of top X division guys or something, and now he's just doing shit like this, which is just completely meaningless. So it kind of sucks for him. And the Candido stuff, yeah, like you said, Logan, the real sad irony of him being like all in this wheelchair and all when a legitimate injury is going to kill him very soon is just really, really kind of sad to watch.
Yeah, it's really actually kind of depressing to even think about, but it's just super ironic at the same time. And yeah, that audiobook idea is a great idea for Dusty. I was sitting there eating a tub of ice cream, and I was thinking about how proud I was of my sons, Cody and Dustin.
So. It's like 1,200 pages.
That would be amazing. But we'll go on to our next match. It's going to be Team Canada, which is comprised of A1 and Petey Williams. And it's going to be 3LK of BG James and Ron Killings taking them on. Team Canada starts the match by jumping from behind while BG's cutting his promo. But 3LK quickly turns things around, taking out both Team Canada guys before doing their little stupid dance and strike-based offense that they do. A1 and Truth then officially start the match. Truth scores a quick drop toe hold and a Hurricane Rana. He then starts hitting the corner mount punches, but Petey actually pulls him down neck first across the top rope. From there, A1 hits a big clothesline before Petey gets tagged in. Team Canada from there continue to wear down Truth, focusing on the neck and head. Damore then gets some choking in from the outside as the ref is distracted. Truth then gets a few shots in before A1 hits probably one of the worst spine busters I've ever seen in my life. A1 then ties Truth in the Tree of Woe so Petey can come in and do the O Canada. Petey then goes for the Canadian Destroyer, but Truth actually breaks out of it, and the two end up crossbodying each other. Both men then get the tag. BG comes in and starts wearing out both Team Canada guys, and then 3LK does the lift axe kick combo that they've done in the past, and that gets them the win. Lewis, what did you think of this Team Canada 3LK match?
Not as bad as it would have been if Conan was in it, but it's not good.
Wait.
A1 Steak Sauce is just the new Team Canada member of the month club, and like, he's not good. He botches a few things in the match. The saving grace of this was that it had Petey Williams and R-Truth in it, so I can't give it no stars, but I'll go 1.5 just because Petey and R-Truth did have some athleticism in it.
Gotcha. Ben, what'd you think?
So for the last match, I said I was a little disappointed given the talent that was involved. For this match, I was pleasantly surprised given the talent involved, because you'd expect a match with A1 and BG to be the drizzle. But, you know, like Lewis said, thanks to PT and Truth, they more than carried it towards passable/watchable. But guys, can you help me out? What was that song at the beginning that BG was trying to get everybody to sing?
Y'all gonna make me lose my mind.
Yeah, it's a DMX song.
Right. I mean, that the Impact crowd is one of like the most rowdy crowds I've ever like heard. Everybody's over in that crowd. Listening to that at the beginning with nobody chanting for anything, that was so sad. It was like, that's like Road Dogg. He was really popular like 4 or 5 years ago. What the fuck's happened here? But yeah, and
they weren't having it.
What
I think just the white crowd doesn't know DMX.
That might be a bit of it as well. But what this match did, we've been so like this pod's now 34 episodes out old, so we're over a year now, easy. And it just reminds you again how good R-Truth is. He's absolutely fantastic, and why they don't push him any harder, I don't know. But yeah, I went 1.75, so I was a little bit higher than Lewis on this. But like I say, pleasantly surprised considering the other guys involved.
I got you. Jake, what did you think?
Yeah, I would have star and a half on it. I didn't think it was, you know, anything great or even really that good. But Truth carried most of the load. I thought was a smart move. I was with you, Logan. That spine buster was definitely not an A1 spine buster. It was no way.
A1, whatever you want to call it.
it was a T3.
Right. It was no good. They really try and push the Conan is missing drama, which is gonna not matter very soon. Like they're just gonna squash that pretty soon. But they're still trying to build this whole Conan is not with the group thing, that there's dissension in the 3LK. But yeah, not too much a note here. Oh, decent enough because of Truth being in there for most of it. And yeah, Petey's another guy that's like, why even have Petey in this match? Just put some other lower tier Team Canada person in here because they have like 14 members at this point. Like, why have the kind of, I don't know, is Petey still the top guy? That's an interesting question. Is like Bobby Roode kind of surpassing him at this point? I don't know.
I think they're trying to let him surpass him. I don't know if he really like in ring has right. For sure, but I think that's definitely where they're trying to go, at least. I mean, they've kind of cornered Petey to be the X Division guy, so he's not going to be able to break out like, you know, an AJ is to be in the heavyweight division. So, but yeah, I think he's kind of been surpassed at that point with that. You know, I didn't enjoy this match when I first watched it, but a match later on in this show made me appreciate that this match is way better than the one that we're going to talk about. So I'm going to actually agree with y'all and say for a 3LK match, this actually wasn't that bad. And Truth and Petey, like y'all have said, did pretty well. So I'll go 1.5 as well. So, after this match, we go to commercial, come back, and we are joined by Primetime, who is on commentary. And, of course, he starts it out with, say my name, Primetime, baby. So he starts his little commentary bit out with that. But I didn't get many more of his lines, but obviously he said it in his fourth grader voice that he has. So, but the next match is going to be his opponent at Lockdown, Christopher Daniels, taking on Mikey Batts. The two guys really trade some good offense back and forth to start the match before Daniels nails an uppercut as Batts is attempting a dive into the ring. He hits a nice tilt-a-roll, that backbreaker from Daniels. Daniels unlocks in a neck wrench, which Batts temporarily breaks out of, but only to get crushed by the STO. Daniels then does a cool-looking pump handle throw. He kind of puts him in a pump handle position and just kind of chucks him up against the turnbuckle. I thought that was a pretty cool move. Batts then gets a flurry of strikes and a clothesline and almost gets a three count on a roll-up before he actually hits like a little sit-out stunner-type move. And he actually gets the visual pin as the ref got knocked down as Skipper comes in the ring and actually counts 1, 2, 3. But the ref was down, so it doesn't count, obviously. Daniels then recovers after, you know, Skipper raises Batts' hand and actually throws Skipper out. And then he hits Angel's wings on Batts. And when the real ref recovers, he gets the pin on Batts for the win. So, Jake, what did you think of this little Daniels-Batts match?
Yeah, I thought it was an okay match. It was pretty much a squash until you got to the end. Then they really went with the Skipper and Daniel stuff. I thought the Batts beater looked pretty good despite its absurd name.
I couldn't tell what they were saying, but I thought that's what they said.
The Batts beater. Beating his bat. But,
Jesus.
Ridiculous name, but pretty cool little move. But yeah, so I went a star on. I kind of went with my squash rating because it's just, that was what the match was to me. But I thought it was a strange way to build to the match by having this thing where like Skipper comes in, he counts 3, but then Daniel still wins the match. It was just real, real odd kind of little segment to have to build their feud. I don't know. Like, I feel like if you're going to do this, you just need to kind of commit to I guess you can't have him lose because he's champ. I don't know. It's just the whole deal is kind of odd, just the way they went about it.
Yeah, without a doubt.
if you'll notice one thing, it's that TNA does not care if they make the champions lose on TV.
Right, like they make them really lose. They lose. Yeah, like Skipper comes in and counts three, and they're selling it like it's the run in the match, but then he comes back and, like, Daniels wins. It's just weird.
An X Division champion loses either visually or actually on TV? No. but Ben, what did you think of this match?
Yeah, I was thinking I was going to go for about one and a half, 2 stars on this, but then that ending just took it all out of me. And like I said before, like the crowd were just weird tonight. Like, they didn't give a shit about BG, and they were not buying that end at all. They were like, they were playing savvy. Like, we know he's not the real ref. The guy with the weird lispy voice, he's not the ref. No. But yeah, the Bats Beater, like, it's one of the worst names I've ever heard for a move. I was like you guys, I had to like rewind it just to make sure I got the name right. It was that ridiculous. And but yeah, the match itself was, like, say, okay, but that end was just terrible. So I do at 1 star as well on it.
And it's also, sorry to chime in again, but on this name, it kind of sounds like he's like, so it's the Bats Beater would be a move that can beat Bats. So it's like a move that can beat himself.
Yeah.
He can conquer himself.
He knows it can conquer himself, so it can conquer anybody else in the process. I guess that's his thought process. But Lewis, what do you think of this Bats Daniels match?
Yeah, I ended up also going 1 star on it just because I didn't think it was that exciting, and the finish was kind of weird with the fake pin. I may have missed if you mentioned it or not, Logan. We get another Dusty book on the announce table, one lone copy in front of
you. Oh, that's Skipper. That's right. I forgot about that.
So another shameless plug, but it's just one book just sitting there all lonely by itself. Not like a signed copy just for Skipper ahead of his match or anything. Nope, just a book sitting there.
He should have brought a box out and just handed it to the front row.
I mean, that would have been better.
Yeah, that would have been better for sure. But yeah, I'll go 1 star on it. I don't think it lasted long enough to really be anything better than it was, and the convoluted finish obviously takes away from it as well. Kind of weird. You know, it wouldn't have, you know, Daniels is pretty untouchable at this point, so I think he could have taken a real loss if they really wanted to build the Skipper dynamic to it a little bit, you know, if he kind of screwed him a little bit. But you know, just the way that they did it was kind of weird, and just I don't know if it really helped or hurt anybody in the process, but it definitely didn't help anybody. But yeah, but from there we'll go to the back. We have 3LK. They're all huddled up together having a little conversation. They're talking about the Outlaw once again. Conan says he's going to go out alone for his match next because he doesn't want to accidentally get hit by a guitar. So it's kind of a jab at BG for hitting him with a guitar at one of the previous pay-per-views. So, but yeah, still tension in 3LK. So hopefully they break up before too long, so we don't have to see him anymore. But don't count on that one. But our next match, as stated, is going to be Conan, and he's going to be taking on Eric Young. Eric Young charges to start the match, but Conan gets out of the way. Obviously, he then whips EY so hard that he tumbles to the outside over the turnbuckle, kind of does the Triple H spot when he gets thrown really hard into the turnbuckle, flips over the top rope. Eric Young then pulls Conan to the outside, where Conan gets a shot in before chasing Damore. Eric Young attacks Conan from behind and rolls back into the ring to distract the ref so Damore can get a few more shots in. Eric Young then gets Conan in the ring and starts to wear him down with some strikes and chokes. Conan then runs in absolute slow motion at certain points in this match, and it's absolutely ridiculous. He gets Irish whipped at one point and is just like walking, basically, and it's just the worst thing I've ever seen. But more cheating by Damore, getting more chokes in. Young then goes for a top rope move, but Conan actually gets the boot up. Back on his feet, he immediately hits the rolling clothesline. We then get a bit of back and forth where two guys kind of trade pin attempts. Conan then catches Eric Young in the corner and hits the Alabama Slam, and then he hits a power bomb, and that scores him the win. Jake, what did you think of this Conan EY match?
Man, this match sucked. Like Conan, I Conan is just so bad. Like, I wasn't even a Conan fan, like in his, you know, quote unquote prime, like in the 90s. So by this point, he's even like, it's just so janky and slow. Like, they can never get into any kind of flow because everything Conan does seems like kind of hesitant, or he like kind of like nothing he does, he's really botching, but it just all looks slow and crappy and nothing really connects well. And like Eric Young is trying to do his best, like he normally does for these dudes, to just bump his ass off, but even he couldn't really save it. Like, the match was nothing. Conan just completely anchors this. Like, it's egregious to put him in there by himself. Like, at least in the 3LK matches, you could maybe have him with Truth, or even like, even find like BG is better than him. Like, BG doesn't do anything, but he doesn't like, he's not as like slow and sloppy as Conan is. So when you have Conan in a singles match, it's just like, it's going to take a miracle worker to go in there and make something passable. And poor Eric Young was not able to make it happen. I want a half a star on it just because I didn't want to completely, I feel like Eric Young was trying, so I'll give half a star to him for doing what he could. But man, this was bad.
Yeah, I was gonna say, at least in tag team matches, he can tag in and out. But yeah, he is, like, Conan is just absolutely in slow motion, everything that he does. Like, he tries to do, he'll do this in the tag match on the next episode we talk about, but he tries to do these transitions and these arm bars and stuff that, like, if it was done by a cruiserweight and, like, a good Mexican wrestler, it would look cool and it would look, like, nifty and, like, he was quick. Right. But he does it so slowly that it just looks so dumb.
He has no, like, flexibility. He looks like an action figure where, like, the limbs don't move. Like,
exactly.
Like, he has no movement in any of his limbs, which is not good for a wrestler.
And especially since he's not that super old yet. So, like, he's already broken down. And, like, you know, he's not, I mean, he's probably not young either, but he's also not, you know, super old at this point. So, Ben, what'd you think of the Conan EY match here?
You've done enough chicken salad with me, Logan, now to know if I write the note, we'll let you know if something interesting happens. You know where I'm going. Dud, 1,000 times dud. Fuck Conan right off. Fuck.
All right, Lewis, what you think?
So, like, here's the thing with Conan and his lack of flexibility. There is a point in the match where EY goes for a little just double leg trip, and he's going to put his feet up on the ropes and attempt to pin Conan with a dirty pin. Well, Conan can't lift his legs to, like, his chest when he's on his back to sell the pin. So it's EY with his arms around Conan's legs with his face just on Conan's dick. With a pin, and Conan's just shoulders are on the mat being pinned with EY's feet on the ropes to give him leverage to just press his face right into that dick. That is how bad this match was. That like, just 5 seconds of pure awfulness. So no stars. I award them no stars.
And may God have mercy on their souls. Yeah, that pin was probably one of the worst things I've ever seen. Yeah, because, like, Conan's just lying there like a dead body, and, like, EY's trying to do his best to, like,
all the leverage from the illegal leverage pin was going into Conan's dick.
Yeah. He's not. That is what happened. Yeah. Yeah, but I'm going dud too. Conan's just, he doesn't need to be in the ring anymore. He can be 3LK's manager and get the crowd hyped up with the, where are my dogs at? Where are they at? But, you know, his usefulness in the ring, even in a tag team match, is just way, way, way expired. So, yeah, this and probably the match on the next show proves to me finally that he, I mean, it's been proven before, but definitely now he does not need to be in the ring anymore. But after this match, we go to the back with Shane Douglas, and he is with AJ Styles and Jeff Hardy. He asks AJ about his match with Abyss. AJ says he's not afraid of Abyss, the man, but he's afraid of what he can do. But fear is something that motivates AJ and drives him, and he's not going to miss his opportunity to be the number one contender. Douglas then asks Hardy about his tables match with Raven. Hardy says he was reborn at Destination X, and that not only will he be locking something down, he's going to take Raven out. Douglas then says these two guys will team up next week against their pay-per-view opponents in a tag team match. And then Raven comes in and absolutely crushes Jeff with a trash can. And then after that, we follow it with a lockdown ad. But Lewis, what did you think of this interview of AJ and Hardy?
It was kind of like, I feel like they scripted it maybe a few minutes before then, because AJ kind of tripped over a couple lines. Jeff, of course, tripped over a couple lines. But again, those are two matches I'm actually excited to see, AJ versus Abyss and Jeff Hardy versus Raven, because I feel like Jeff and Raven can beat the crap out of each other. And AJ always puts on good matches, so I'm interested to see what him and Abyss can do in a cage. And then, yeah, the trash can shot at the end there. And that also didn't make sense to me. Like, AJ's there, and he sees Raven just do the trash can shot. And he's, like, hovering over Jeff. I feel like AJ should have just, like, attacked Raven and then, like, fight instead of just stand there and watch Raven walk off. So that was a weird thing to me.
Yeah, I gotcha. Ben, what did you think of the interview?
So on the last pod, Sean christened the tag team of Jeff Hardy and Shocker as Methhead and McDonald's. I've got that right, haven't I?
Correct.
So what is, I need to ask you boys, because obviously I am a foreigner, what is the Southern American version of McDonald's? Because what have we got here? We've got Methhead and
Chick-fil-A, Hardee's, yeah. Bojangles.
Bojangles. There you go. Yeah,
Methhead and Bojangles are coming to fight next week. So yeah, we'll go. But yeah, I would.
Erwin and Hardee's.
Well, no. AJ's from Georgia, so it's got to be Chick-fil-A. It's AJ, or it's Methhead's and Chick-fil-A. Yeah. There you go.
Chick-fil-A, okay, we'll go.
Crackheads and Chick-fil-A.
I like, that's the one. We've got to keep the alliteration, yeah. But yeah, I'm with Lewis there, because it was like AJ just sort of drifted off out of shot, and then Raven was just there with the trash can. It's like, what was going on?
Are they blind? How did he not see him? But yeah, this is kind of weird. But Jake, what do you think?
Yeah, this is kind of an unfortunate pairing for a promo, because these are two guys, like, I feel like most of their charisma comes from their in-ring stuff, not on the mic. And so, like, it's them together trying to, like, act cool, and they both try and give these, like, cool lines that come off really awkward. Like, they're both just sort of weird on the mic and awkward. Like, AJ says something about, like, whatever, like, Abyss is trying to deal poison. He's like, I digest poison well. Strange thing to say. And then Jeff says, like, we're not only going to lock something down, we're going to take them out. Just, I don't know. They're trying to sound cool and they sound weird. And then, yeah, it's weird that AJ just kind of stands by and watches them get wrecked. And then it cracked me up that at the end, it's just AJ going, Jeff, are you okay, Jeff?
Jeff, are you all right?
Yeah, like, not the greatest acting.
Yeah, that was definitely weird. Weird promo, and yeah, definitely not the two guys that you probably want cutting intense little promos before their big matches. So, I mean, they got to do it at some point, I guess. But yeah, definitely not in this little segment like this. But yeah, just a weird one for sure. But we'll move on into our main event for the night, and it's going to be Sean Waltman and Diamond Dallas Page, and they're going to be taking on Monty Brown and the Outlaw. Jarrett, of course, joins us for commentary. Before the match, Kevin Nash actually comes out and tries to take Jarrett out, but about 20 security guards stop him and hold him back and take him back out to the back of the arena. But to start the match, Outlaw and DDP are in there. DDP gets a few shots in and goes for the diamond cutter, but Outlaw actually slips out, so he's going for the finish pretty quickly. DDP then continues to get the better of Outlaw and then tags in Waltman, who almost immediately gets hit with a back elbow, so he loses the momentum that DDP had the whole match to that point. Outlaw then tags in Monty before we go to commercial. We come back from commercial, and Outlaw is wearing down DDP, but DDP actually gets an elbow in and goes to bounce off the ropes, but Monty clubs him from behind. Outlaw then hits a neckbreaker and tags Monty in, and he continues to wear down DDP. The ref gets stupidly distracted by Waltman, so Monty and Outlaw actually double team, and Outlaw actually comes in and acts like he's the legal man. He does a pretty impressive delayed vertical suplex at that point. Monty then is back in and continues beating DDP down. DDP then gets some shots in and eventually knocks Monty off his feet and falls headfirst into his balls. Both men then are able to get the tag to their partners. Waltman comes in with some big kicks on Outlaw. Waltman actually hits the six factor, but Monty breaks up the pin. Monty then gets hit with the cutter. Outlaw then comes in and hits the Famouser on DDP. Jarrett then comes in the ring with a guitar and crushes Waltman, which is actually allows the heels to get the victory. We then get DDP taking it to Jarrett after the match, which leads to all six men being in the back for the Lethal Lockdown match, and they all kind of brawl as the show goes to black. Lewis, what did you think of this main event?
I thought it was actually kind of okay. I like seeing Waltman in the ring. I like seeing his like spin heel kick because he hits it like decently okay, and the Bronco Buster's a fun thing to see, and I don't know. I haven't grown tired of Waltman yet in his brief stint in the company. I enjoyed this match because I guess it was the best match of the night in my opinion. And I went 3 stars on it. I would have loved to see just Monty pounce the shit out of Waltman, like out of the ring fully. That would have been fun. And then like, we were talking about earlier, they're kind of like timing on the shows, and like they ran out of time to the point where at the very end, when Kevin Nash comes in to kind of break up the fight backstage, it's him for like 3 seconds, and then they have to fade to black because they went over time. So they, yeah, that timing issue really seems to hit a lot in these TNA shows. But the match itself, I don't have anything to complain about it other than not getting to see like a lot of satisfying pounces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, nothing better than a satisfying pounce. Ben, what do you think of the main event?
You know when Sean's on, he usually moans his bag off about star ratings and stuff. All I'm going to say is, Lewis, you've been smoking some good shit tonight, haven't you? I don't get me wrong, I didn't think it was bad. I only went 2 stars on it, but I was like, 3 stars, really?
Well, I mean, I think just because it was match of the night, it was a main event with main eventers.
I will say, they played to their strengths well. I'll give them credit for that. But just to go back to before the match, does anybody look more disinterested when they're in a brawling like situation than Kevin Nash? He just looks like he's been drinking. He probably has actually. He's probably just been drinking on the wine with Dusty all afternoon, and it's like he's a big lad and he's there, and he's just like, I'll make it look like I'm trying to get through, and it just never works. But as for the match, I thought the match was, like I say, it was perfectly fine, perfectly good. Sean Waltman looked really great considering not been in the ring for a little while. And yeah, I with Lewis, I'd have liked to see some more pounces, but you know, we did get that.
I mean, man, I was so drunk, they were just holding me up, like I couldn't break through.
That's what it looked like to me. It was like, shall I try and get through? Okay.
Man, I don't really want to fight Jared. I just want to get paid. Get me out of there, man. But Jake, what did you think of the main event?
Yeah, you guys kind of brought up a good point that was, you know, I kind of noticed in this match with Monty, like wanting to see him pounce people. And that we've talked about how illogical it is that he would turn heel here. They even have another moment, which I don't know why they're putting themselves in this position, but they, every show, they have a moment where somebody, they either ask Monty or like here, Double J's on commentary, and they ask him like, well, what's up with Monty? Why did he join up with you? And he pretty much gives no answer or any reason why. He's just like, well, you know, he just wanted to be with me. So it's like, why even ask him? Like, he's just putting him in a position to give a dumb answer. And so, like, I think another bad part of this is that I don't know if Monty works well right now as a heel, because like we've said it, we all love Monty, but it's not, he's not like Dean Malenko with some advanced arsenal of moves. So like in this match, when he has to be on top as a heel and kind of work over the faces, he really doesn't have a whole lot to do. Like, he just does these sort of basic stomps and stuff, like really nothing too entertaining. And so as a heel, he's kind of put in that position, but it doesn't really work for what he's capable of. He worked a lot better as a face, where he could kind of either come in and crush people with a few moves, or he could get beat up. If he's facing somebody more legitimate, like in the Jeff Jarrett match, he would get beat up for a while and he would fire up and like beat the guy up and the crowd would pop. But now you just kind of have boring plotting Monty kind of stomping people, which kind of sucks. And you know, you kind of see it here, but I'm more with Ben. I went too on it. I didn't think it was bad, but also didn't think it was anything great. Like, it was a pretty typical tag structure, I thought. But I will agree with Lewis in that Six Pac, I guess they called him here, with the number six in his intro. I thought he was sort of the highlight of the match for me. I was really entertained by him. He has some good fire. Like, he took a pretty big bump that they almost missed when they were going to the break. They caught it just a little bit, but he took a pretty solid bump out of the ring. So he seems like, of these veteran guys, these WWE guys they're bringing in, he seems almost the most motivated, which is cool. And so I kind of like seeing him. I hope they give him a little bit more of a spot, because I feel like he's trying for the most part. But yeah, it was a typical match. I went 2 stars. Of course, it ends with the fucking guitar, as always. But as far as like how the match was worked, I thought it was fine, except for, again, I don't think this is the best position for Monty. I don't think it plays to his strengths, which, again, is just another reason why his turn was so dumb and made no sense.
Yeah, he needs to get in there, dominate, hit the pounce, and, you know, be done. You know, that's how he works. That's the best way you can use him. I mean, he can be in a long match, but, you know, he needs to have that ability to fire up and really get the crowd behind him. So this heel run hasn't worked too well so far. And I don't anticipate it's going to at any point, but maybe he'll get it picked up eventually. But we'll see as we go through the rest of the shows. But I'm with you guys. I'd go 2 stars on it. Like Lewis said, there wasn't anything wrong with it, but it wasn't all that impressive at the same time. Six Pac definitely, or Walton, whatever you want to call him, really stood out in this match. He pulled out some impressive stuff, and you know, he kind of tied the match together for all the other veteran guys we have in here. But yeah, just a pretty good main event. Nothing special, but a good way to end the show. And I do wish we could have seen a little bit of the brawl at the end, but like Lewis said, maybe they ran out of time, so or maybe they did it on purpose so they didn't have to show us anything. But I'll stick with Jake. What did you think of this episode, and what would you score it?
This to me was like the definition of one of these impacts where I didn't feel like anything besides the Conan match, which was only a very small part of the show, was really bad, but nothing, it all just felt so skippable. Like, I feel like if you were watching these in order in the build to Lockdown, you could completely skip this episode and it wouldn't matter. Like, there's nothing storyline wise, there's not any real match that has anything interesting going on that you would consider. Like, I think most of, you know, a lot of my ratings, I don't think I went above a 2, which is, you know, nothing real bad, but it's also nothing I would go out of my way to see. So with that, I went 3.5, because usually like a 3 is when I start getting into like it was a bad show, but then a 4 or 5 is more like solid to good. And I felt like it was somewhere in between those. Skippable would be my description of this one.
It would be skippable in a viewer's choice way of putting it, from the north-south feed there. But Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm kind of a little higher, but Jake's right. This is a skippable show. I went 4 on it, but like if you're gonna just put something on, this is fine. But it's not gonna do anything to get any eyes onto Lockdown. It's just a series of like reasonable 2-star matches, and then that Conan abomination. That's your entertainment value those 5 minutes.
Exactly. Lewis, what do you think?
Yeah, I was ready to rate this a 4-star, but then with Jake saying the like lack of any actual storyline push in this show, I am gonna adjust my score down to 3.5, just because, yeah, now that I think about it, nothing happened that matters to Lockdown. So with absolutely nothing happened, there's no way I can give this a 4-star match, because that's a 4-star show, because that's too close to actually being a somewhat interesting show.
Yeah, I gotcha. I agree with y'all's points, but I'm going to go with Ben and go with a 4. I think that's kind of like where this show sits. Nothing other than the Conan debacle was all out terrible, but nothing was absolutely outstanding or anything like that. But I definitely agree with all y'all's points, and I get where y'all are coming from with y'all's 3.5 for sure. But that'll finish our first episode, our first episode we're looking at tonight, and we will be back on the other side with our second episode, the April 22nd episode. So we will see you on the other side. Place to be Nation, welcome back to the second half of our show where we will be discussing the April 22nd episode of TNA Impact. We start our episode with highlights of Shane Douglas' interview with Jeff Hardy and Style and AJ Styles from a week ago, and the announcement of the big main event tag for this week, which will feature those two taking on Raven and Abyss. Tanay then welcomes us into the Impact Zone and tells us the countdown to lockdown is almost up, and then he hypes the big tag team main event a little bit more. But we go into our first match, and it's going to be 3 Live Crew. It's going to be all 3 guys this time, and they're going to be taking on Lex Lovett, David Young, and Buck Quartermain. So the big job squad going on here, the Jamoke squad, I think, as we used to call them. But Conan and Lex Lovett actually start things out. Conan does some armbar transitions that I think he thinks are supposed to look cool, but they're just really slow and sloppy looking, so I don't know what he was actually going for, but it looks awful because Conan does it. Conan then takes off his shoe like he had previously at, I think, Destination X, and throws it at his opponents. He actually throws it at Lex, and it actually goes into the crowd, so the crowd actually has to throw it back at him, and then he throws it at Buck Quartermain for a little bit. Lex then tags in David Young, and Conan tags in Truth. Truth immediately scores with a big arm drag and then hits a running power slam. BG then charges across to rile up the heels enough to get the ref to stop them from coming in. And then 3LK, while the ref is distracted, actually hits the what's up leg drop. Then BG stays in the ring even though he didn't get tagged, but he gets whipped to the ropes where Buck actually nails him in the back. BG then decks both guys on the apron before turning around, and David Young hits him with a spinebuster. Buck then gets tagged in and scores with a big knee. He then takes him to the corner, and the 3 heels kind of wear BG down. BG eventually reverses a whip, which results in him and Buck kind of just running into each other. BG then goes for a quick roll-up, but Buck actually pops out and nails a clothesline. He then tags in Lex, and they both end up getting double clotheslined by BG. Truth then gets tagged in by BG, and David Young actually gets tagged in as well. And then 3LK ended up coming in, and they all clean house, leading to Truth hitting the scissors kick on David Young for the win. Jake, what do you think of this opener for this episode?
Yeah, this is like a typical 3LK squash match, which I guess they're okay now. No dissension anymore. They're all reunited. Great for us. Not really, but the heels do really basic stuff whenever they have any kind of advantage. This was the full-on Jamoke squad heel team with David Young. Who was the third person again? It was David Young, Lex Lovett, and
Buck Quartermain.
Of course.
Quarter Pounder.
Mr. Quartermain. Mr. Quartermain. All I can think of every time he throws a shoe is the Austin Powers thing about, like, who throws a shoe?
Honestly.
So I want a star on it because it was a basic squash match, and at least you have, Truth in there to kind of dilute the shittiness of his teammates.
Lex Lovett just looks at Conan and says, "That really hurt."
I mean, really?
Does a shoe? But Ben, what do you think?
That those accents were amazing. It was like having Russell Brand in the room with me. Good Lord.
Oh, Jesus. That's not a compliment.
I was really happy when Team Jobber came out, and then I realized that they were going to be facing 3LK, so I was all conflicted then. I mean, Conan the Shoe thing, did he do that in WCW as well? Because it's like, it's just awful. It's just awful. And like you say, the fact that, you know, that they're suddenly friendly and pally again, the maddening thing is, this is taped at the same show as the previous one, because I could tell, because there was those two kids who were wearing Man United tops, and they were both still there. So it was definitely taped from the week before. And yeah, and the match itself, I went one star as well. Again, it's just another reminder how good Truth is.
Yeah. Lewis, what do you think?
Yeah, there was nothing really exciting going on here. The Job Squad is the Job Squad for a reason. And, like, I just, try as I might, there's nothing I can find satisfying about a 3LK match. Minus, like, the split seconds of time we see R-Truth get to be R-Truth. I went one star on it.
I got you. Yeah, I went one star as well. Nothing super offensive other than the start with Conan. Yeah, just, you know, not super inspiring. We have the Jamoke Squad, as we said, and then 3LK, which doesn't always necessarily bring the best outside of what Truth can bring to the show. But yeah, one star, pretty uninspiring start to the show. But after this, we go to our we're gonna have some lockdown or cage match moments of the night. They call them the lockdown top moments, but we've never had a lockdown before, so we've had cage matches before, it's gonna be the top five cage match moments of TNA history. And ironically, they're all from like three different matches, so it's not really that impressive. But Chase Stevens, moonsault from the top. We discussed this one earlier in the pod in a previous episode. But when the Naturals and AMW took on each other, Chase Stevens did a moonsault from the top. So that's number five. We cut to a point where JB is in Puerto Rico, kind of hyping a show that Jeff Jarrett had defended his title on. And Abyss, AMW, and Team Canada had all appeared at this same Puerto Rico show. So, just kind of showing that Jarrett is a traveling champion. And I think, Jarrett loses the title and it's like not recognized at some point. He may lose the title at this show. I'm not 100% sure. I should have probably done some research on that, but, he loses it in Puerto Rico at some point, before he actually loses it to who he loses it to in TNA. But like they don't recognize it and it's, you know, abolished or whatever. But I don't know if it happens in the show. I'll probably research that and update everybody on the next episode. But yeah, they hyped this Puerto Rico show that all these guys have been to. But after that, we go to our number four moment from the cage matches, and it's the Tower of Doom spot from the Turning Point match between AMW and XXX. Even though it's kind of botched, I guess it was still pretty cool that everybody just kind of crumbled all over each other in that one. We then go to Tanae and West, and they talk about Skipper and Daniels and all their feud that has been going on so far. And it leads to a package where they talk about Daniels and his ascension to the top of the X division and the fact that he's going to stay there no matter what it takes. And he's got what it takes to make or to stay where he is. And that's at the top of the mountain. We get another lockdown ad. And then we move on to moment number three, which is AMW's death sentence from the top of the cage. I believe that happened in the first AMW XXX cage match that had happened before this pod even started. And then after that, Dustin Rhodes joins us on commentary and almost immediately gets crowned with a steel chair from Bobby Roode. And Bobby Roode kind of keeps bashing him with the chair until AMW comes out and makes the save. I'll stop here. Jake, what do you think of the moments that they've been showing, the Puerto Rico stuff, and just anything that happened in this little segment right here? What do you think?
Yeah, I think the moments are actually a pretty good move by them. It does kind of get you interested in seeing the pay-per-view, like all the cage matches, even though I'm really skeptical of it because I feel like it's going to be cage match burnout when we actually get to the show, but we'll see what happens. I thought Daniel's promo was okay, but it was a little bit long, and I feel like he got a little rambling and weird throughout it. Like he didn't really know what to say to fill all that time, so he just kept saying like random shit. Like, Elix can't beat me because he's only a man and I'm immortal and all this. I don't know. Just, it was, I feel it dragged a bit too long for what he was capable of. But yeah, we're getting to a point in the show where it really just kind of started dragging. Like, they were obviously trying to fill up. They didn't have a lot of stuff to put on the actual show as far as like things that are happening in the Impact Zone. So they have to fill it up with all these just, I feel like so many ads, so many lockdown promos. It was reaching the point of absurdity.
Yeah, Isaiah, I think this is the longest stretch of stuff that they could put between these two, the first match and this next match that we're about to talk about, that they could have. But Ben, what do you think?
Okay, so the 3LK match, I timed it. 3LK match finished at 9:35 into the show. Would you like to have a guess when the second match started?
I'm terrified to ask, but when did it start?
It started at 20 minutes and 22 seconds. So this is literally 10 and a half minutes of shit, basically. I mean, I'm being a bit harsh there. Shit's a bit harsh. The moments was a fine idea, but like you say, they've basically only got three matches to pick from. So, you know, you might as well just show just sort of a few highlight packages from Turning Point and the Naturals cage match to get you ready, especially with the second match we've got coming up as well. Daniels was like a guy who's told to cut a promo and we're gonna intersperse it with these clips, and that just didn't work at all because he hasn't got the chops to be a long promo guy yet. But yeah, I mean, somebody got their timings and format sheet totally wrong in this show.
Maybe just a little bit for sure. But Lewis, what did you think of the moments and the, you know, all the stuff that happened in this little break here?
Yeah, a lot of promo and vignette stuff here. But I mean, so some of it was interesting. Like the Puerto Rico stuff was interesting, that TNA's getting like more international recognition there. I would have loved to see a few more clips of the matches instead of just like the one guitar shot from Jarrett. And like, hopefully this leads like some Puerto Rico guys coming over to TNA to do a little cross promotional stuff there. I enjoyed the like countdown they're doing with the top cage match stuff, even though there hasn't been that many cage matches. I thought the Tower of Doom spot should have gotten a higher ranking because that was an awesome spot. I'll complain more about the rankings of the cage match stuff later when we see number two.
Everyone will, I hope.
But yeah, like it's the go home show. So I expected more like promo and vignette stuff, but that was a lot of time spent on it.
Yeah. I gotcha. Yeah. This is just a lot of time filled with a lot of stuff. I do like the moments. And I like that they showed them kind of going to other countries and kind of expanding their, a global awareness and stuff like that, kind of showing that they go to other countries and kind of, you know, work with other promotions, stuff like that. And I actually looked it up while y'all were talking. He loses it to a guy named Ray Gonzalez on April 3rd, 2005. So I don't know if this had happened before and they're just now showing it, but I think he actually does lose the title to this guy. But like I said, it gets, you know, completely unrecognized and they just kind of throw it back to Jarrett. So he actually had lost the belt before you missed an episode. Technically, Jake, if you want to take some solace in that, but yeah, obviously they get handed right back.
Yes.
So you actually did beat it. Just a lot of time filling. I like the moments, but they could have cut down on it a little bit, I think, and made this episode a little tighter, I think. But we'll move on from all that to the Naturals taking on America's Most Wanted. That's our next match. The Naturals actually attempt to catch AMW coming in the ring with some kicks, but AMW actually ends up pulling them out. And for the next about 2 or 3 minutes, they absolutely whip their asses on the outside of the ring, just chuck them all around the ramp, into the guardrail, into the post, pretty much anything you can think of they throw them into or throw them onto. Harris and Storm finally get Douglas into the ring, and of course we go immediately to commercial as that happens. We come back, and Stevens is wearing down Storm. He quickly tags in Douglas, and he continues to do the wear down. Storm eventually breaks out of an abdominal stretch with a hip toss and then hits a twisting power slam. Storm then gets the tag, and Harris comes in and really whips up on Douglas. Harris then goes for a backdrop, but Douglas actually gets a boot to the face and tags in Stevens. Stevens then climbs to the top rope, but quickly gets dumped off. Both Naturals try to attack Harris, but Harris keeps wearing them both out. Storm eventually comes in and clotheslines Douglas out of the ring. Behind that, though, Stevens had actually hit a jawbreaker and a big kick on Harris. After trading some reversals with Storm, he actually hits the last call on Stevens. AMW then seems to be going for the death sentence, but Douglas pulls Storm out of the ring and then throws him into the guardrail. This distracts the ref long enough for Candido to hop up out of his wheelchair and hit Harris with the loaded cast. He had loaded a chain into it to make it a little harder, I guess. But he hits him with that as he's hitting the catatonic on Stevens. But as they both fall to the mat, he rolls Stevens on top of Harris, and the Naturals actually get the upset win here. Lewis, what'd you think of this Naturals AMW match?
So I kind of teased it earlier that TNA is not afraid to let the champions lose on TV, and this was an interesting way to go about doing it. Again, I love the Candido stuff. I love him being in the wheelchair. I love the cast shot. I felt like the cast and the chain was a bit overkill. Like, the cast itself is a pretty convincing weapon. But yeah, I love the fake injury Candido stuff, and I know that it gets replaced with the real one pretty soon, so that's a little heartbreaking.
Yeah, I got you. Ben, what'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, this is perfectly fine tag team wrestling, but it's almost sort of monthly reminder just how much better AMW are than the Naturals. But they do need new challengers rather than just, you know, facing Team Canada sort of every other month. So I was all for it. I like the ending. I like the ending because, you know, like Lewis said in the first part, I am a sucker for the crippled wrestler suddenly rising angle. So yeah, I was all in on this. This is fine for me.
I got you, Jake. What did you think?
Yeah, Candido is really entertaining. Doing this whole angle, despite how kind of dark it is, knowing what's going to happen. Yeah, the match itself was like it's. You know, it was AMW kind of carried along with their energy and just like whipping the piss out of the Naturals. But the Naturals just don't bring enough to the table to really make something interesting out of a match like this, which I know they've had some great ones in the past. But I think we figured out, like, after going through the pod, that it was kind of just like everything worked out perfectly for them. Like in that cage match, everything, like all the circumstances were right for them to have a great match. Because even here, just in a short match like this, it's not really, like, Naturals just don't bring enough to really do much of it. So I want a star and a half on it, mainly for AMW. And I'm hoping they kind of keep back up as we continue on.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that. But yeah, I'll go 1.5 as well. I thought AMW looked really good, as they always do. The Naturals, I think this is a match that was really hurt by where the commercial was, because I feel like AMW was really dominating before the commercial, and then you just come back and they're in a rest hold. So I mean, it would have been nice to see what happened in between that, just kind of see where it led to, you know, the Naturals being on offense. But you know, they tried to heat it up as much as they could. Candido obviously is still super entertaining, and he made this match pretty entertaining at the end, hopping up out of his wheelchair even though he's got all these injuries. So Candido continues to impress. Yeah, I thought it was a pretty solid match, but 1.5 is what I'd go on as well. But we go to the back, we get another lockdown ad. We get moment number 2, which is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. Number 2 is somebody missing a move. So Hardy does a swanton off the top of the cage, and Jarrett was laying there, and he completely misses. So somehow that's the second best moment to ever happen in a cage match. And I'm pretty sure this aired on the Best Damn Sports Show Live, because I've literally never seen this cage match, if it was even a match. It kind of looked like it was just like an attack. So this is not a cage match that happened on TV or a weekly pay-per-view. So I don't know what this happened on, if they just had a match on that show or what. But yeah, missing the swanton is good for episode or moment number two. What were you going to say?
I ask the question, when did this take place? Because I don't remember talking about it. I don't remember any of us. I don't remember seeing it.
Yeah, I think it was just, it must have just been like a promo he was cutting in the cage or something like that. And Tardy took him down and went for a swanton. It had the Best Damn Sports Show logo in the background, so I'm guessing it had something to do with that. There was a banner in the back. But yeah, I'm sure this is the moment that Lewis was talking about earlier.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I got you. Mike and Don then break down the rest of the pay-per-view Sunday, kind of go through the matches, and then we get kind of a little bit of a package on the Lethal Lockdown match between Outlaw, Jarrett, Monty taking on Nash, Waltman, and DDP. So they do a little bit of a package on that. And then we, of course, get our top moment from the cage matches. And, of course, it is the best moment in probably TNA history. It's going to be the tightrope Hurricanrana that Skipper hits on Harris at Turning Point that we have discussed previously. That was just one of the most amazing moments we had ever seen in a match to that point. So, and probably ever. Yeah, just a great moment. And obviously it was going to be the number one, no doubt about it. But, Lewis, obviously you have problems with number two, so what do you think the rest of the list and kind of the lockdown ad?
Yeah, number two was definitely misplaced. I feel like that Tower of Doom spot should have been number two, but the number one was the clear choice. And yeah, it not just in cage match stuff, but like that tightrope walk Hurricanrana is the like epitome of TNA. Like if you look up TNA gifs or ever see a TNA clip, like that is the clip of TNA, is that tightrope walk Hurricanrana. So definitely a deserving spot for it there.
Yeah, I got you. Ben, what'd you think of the last two moments and the Lethal Lockdown ad?
It had to be number one. There's no other choice for it. But like I say, my issue was the fact that there's been so few cage matches to begin with. Like, why you do the list? Just do like you could just do a video package, just selling the savagery and barbaric nature of the cage and include all these in rather than try and spread them out throughout the show. Because obviously, like I say, the whole 10-minute bit aberration with all the packages before, the formatting for this show was seriously lacking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got you. Jake, what do you think?
Yeah, I honestly feel like the whole point of them doing the list was just to give them an excuse to show the Elix moment again. Mm-hmm. Like, I really think that's what they wanted to do. All the lockdown, all I can think of was at one point, Don and Tanae say something like, call your cable provider and ask him for TNA lockdown. I'm thinking if you call the cable provider and tell him you want to watch TNA lockdown, they're definitely going to think you're ordering like an adult film about a ladies' jail or something.
Oh my god!
TNA lockdown.
The precursor to Orange Is the New Black.
Right, exactly. Like definitely a women's jail porno for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that totally makes sense. A lot of parents are gonna get a lot of phone calls for that. I think the number two moment is a big miss, especially because it didn't even happen in a match that most people saw. So, him missing the move is kind of stupid. So I definitely think that one should have been replaced. But number one had to be number one. And, the Lethal Lockdown ad is pretty much the only build we get to what's billed as the main event of the pay-per-view. So I kind of thought it was weird that Jarrett, Monty, DDP or Nash or any of those guys weren't even on this go home show at all. So that was kind of the only essence of those guys that we saw. So I thought that was kind of weird. That their go home shows don't tend to really build much to the pay-per-view for some reason. So it kind of fits the bill that we've gone through so far. But that'll lead to our main event for this second episode. It's going to be Raven and Abyss, and they're going to be taking on Jeff Hardy and AJ Styles. Raven and Hardy start in the ring, but after kind of pacing around for a little bit, Raven tags out before actually getting physical. Abyss then comes in and gets some big strikes in before Hardy uses his speed to kind of evade a clothesline. Hardy does a couple of clotheslines of his own to kind of knock down Abyss, but eventually gets hit with a big boot. Abyss then goes for a leg drop but misses. Hardy then does a snap neck breaker and a leg drop to the balls before tagging in AJ. AJ then comes in and nails a middle rope knee and then clotheslines Abyss to the outside. Raven then just decides that he's the legal man without even tagging in. He just comes in and decides that he's the legal man now, and comes in and immediately gets hit with a drop kick and a spinning wheel kick. AJ then continues to wear down Raven from there. He eventually goes for a phenomenal forearm, but Abyss trips him up on the top rope and wears him down on the outside from there. He throws him back in the ring where Raven attempts to get a pin, but he only gets two. Raven then tags in Abyss. Abyss and Raven then continue to chuck around and beat up AJ as we go to commercial. We come back, and AJ is in a neck wrench, and he temporarily breaks out of it, but almost gets thrown to the ceiling by Abyss. Abyss does that thing where he just kind of lifts him up in the air and pushes him towards the sky. So, and he gets pretty high off the ground. I think Don West exclaims that he goes 8 feet off the ground, which might be a little bit of a fib, but I thought that was a pretty funny line by him. The heels then continue to tag in and out, wearing down AJ as they have for most of the match. Raven eventually sets up a table on the outside and tells Abyss to throw AJ through it on the outside. Abyss then tries to go for a crucifix bomb or a razor's edge or whatever you want to call it. But AJ slips out and hits Big Enziguri. AJ then goes for the tag, but Hardy had been knocked down earlier in the match, so Raven actually drags him away from his corner until AJ hits an Enziguri on Raven as well. Hardy then makes it back to the apron and gets tagged, immediately comes in and really starts giving it to the heels. AJ then tries to do a dive to the outside to take out Abyss, but Abyss actually catches him, and he runs him back first into the post. Hardy is then in the ring, still taking it to Raven, when Abyss starts to try to charge at Hardy, but Hardy moves, and Abyss actually squishes Raven in the corner. Hardy then knocks Abyss outside of the ring and then hits a twist of fate on Raven, but then the pin gets broken up as he goes for the pin. Abyss then hits the black hole slam on Hardy, but AJ makes the save on a pinfall with a dive. AJ then goes for the clash on Abyss, but Raven actually drop kicks him. Raven then holds Hardy, just kind of holds him there, and tells Abyss to hit him with the chain that Abyss brings out to the ring. But as he's about to hit Hardy with the chain, AJ actually kind of sacrifices himself and takes the blow with the chain, which actually results in a very rare disqualification. So we actually get a DQ to end this match. And then after the match, Abyss and Raven just absolutely wreck Hardy and Styles. Hardy goes through the table, and then Styles gets bashed up with the chain pretty good. So that's how we close our show for the night. But Jake, what'd you think of this main event?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this main event quite a bit, and AJ looked like a complete star throughout this. Just great bumps, great, all his offense was really awesome. Just as we've been through these two shows, it was kind of, a lot of stuff was kind of ho-hum, and it just felt like such a breath of fresh air when he got this match and just to see him do his thing. And it was like, you know, I criticized him in the last show for not kind of building to the pay-per-view and not having good matches, where I feel like this kind of accomplished both, because I thought this is a pretty good match, and also kind of it gave you a nice preview of AJ Abyss without giving too much away, because their interaction was really cool, but it also wasn't, you know, it did just enough to get you interested in seeing them have a match together, but without giving too much away, which I thought was cool, and it showed that they have chemistry together, so maybe you want to see what they're going to do at lockdown. I thought the bump he took when Abyss knocked him off the rope was really awesome and a nice like change of momentum in the match. Fast paced. I like the faces using their speed to kind of go at Abyss, knowing that he's more powerful. So it kind of, you know, we've seen Abyss maybe sell a little bit too much at some of his matches, but at least here they kind of built it into the match as to why they were getting the upper hand on him. So I thought that was cool. So yeah, I thought this is a really solid main event and built to the pay-per-view well. And the post-match was good too. Really good violence. Like, it really felt like some true violence. And I love AJ fighting back at the end where he starts pounding right as they go off the air while he's in the stretcher. You know, like, just building some good hype for the pay-per-view. And it also kind of let us know, and they've kind of hinted about it in the commercials too, that, you know, viewer discretion advised or whatever, but it kind of lets you know that Lockdown could maybe be a bit more violent than some of the previous shows. And I like that they put that across at the end too. So I would 2.5 on the match itself, but I thought this was an awesome way to close the show. Just kind of hit all the points they should and kind of did all the things that I said they weren't doing on the last episode, which was cool.
Gotcha. Ben, what did you think?
Pretty much everything that Jake said. You know, the match was really, you know, really good. Great end sequence as well. The great, you know, the beatdown at the end that the chain wrapped around the neck into the chair is one of the most violent things I've seen on a wrestling show for a long time, and I thought it was really good. I will say, I think, you know, you said earlier on, why did we not have anything from the Lethal Lockdown? Why was that downgraded? And I think the reason why is because they were putting all their eggs into this basket tonight. They wanted to, you know, showcase Hardy and Raven, but in particular, they wanted to showcase AJ and Abyss because they knew that was going to be the main event. So I think that's why they did it. I'm with you with what happened earlier in the show. They could have put an interview out here for Lethal Lockdown, but I think they wanted to just put everything into this. As for, like I say, though, the match itself is really, you know, really good. I went 2.75 on it, so just slightly higher than Jake. And that beatdown at the end is probably one of the best end sequences. Pardon me. End sequences we've had for Impact. Oh God!
So good.
Better be okay. Better be okay.
Take a drink.
No, you're fine. No, I think if they had hyped AJ and I understand AJ and Abyss ends up being the main event, but if they had hyped it that way, I'd have been fine with it. But just they've been hyping the Lethal Lockdown as the main event so far, so it's just weird that they didn't even get an interview segment or anything. I mean, I guess they did on the previous episode, but it's just kind of weird on the go-home show. But like I said, they don't necessarily do go-home shows that well to this point. So, but Lewis, what did you think of the main?
Yeah, I thought the match itself was really good. I enjoyed most of the like sequences there. The only there are a couple weird things with like Raven just deciding he was the legal man for a bit. We had the classic, most intense rivalry in TNA history, Abyss versus putting a chair into the corner. It's my all-time favorite rivalry.
I was going to mention that.
it's my all-time favorite rivalry in TNA. I don't think anyone mentioned a classic just shitty TNA refereeing here where during the brawl, I don't remember if it was Don West or Mike Tenay, one of them said, I believe this match has been called a double disqualification, no contest. And I'm sitting here thinking, no, it very clearly should just be a one-way disqualification here. But one of the announcers definitely said it was a double disqualification for no apparent reason. But yeah, after the match, them sending Hardy through the table, that chain pull into the steel chair that AJ took, those were awesome. So, like, overall, the match itself and, like, the post-match beatdown, I went 3 stars with it.
Yeah, I definitely went 3 stars as well. The beatdown at the end was absolutely great. And I did, like Jake said, I didn't mention it, but the little comeback on the stretcher that AJ gets was pretty awesome as well. But I think all 4 guys look really good in this match. I thought it was a great way to end the show. This is the kind of stuff that they need to finish their go-home shows with. So as much as this hasn't been the best go-home show, and as much as their go-home shows in the past to these pay-per-views haven't been either even good or they've been all-out terrible to this point. But I think this is definitely the kind of stuff that you need to put on a show like this to kind of build that last little bit to the pay-per-view, because this gets you really excited for these 2 matches that are going to happen on Lockdown. So, yeah, definitely 3 stars, a solid way to end the show. But, Lewis, I'll stick with you. What'd you think of the episode? What would you score it out of 10?
The episode itself, like that last match being good was definitely a plus, but the just weight of all the like promos, commercials, vignettes, like that really bogged down a go home show before a pay per view. So I ended up going just 3 stars on it, just because I felt like there, outside of that main event match, there was a lot of filler here.
Mm-hmm. I got you, Ben. What did you think?
This is a 46-minute show, and at least 20 minutes of that is filler. So, it was a definite step below from the first show, and that was I went 4 out of 10. So I'm going to go 3 out of 10 for this, because the main event's, you know, better than anything that was on the previous show. But the previous show just didn't have, like I say, nearly half the show being basically video packages and a countdown.
Yeah, I got you. Jake, what did you think?
Yeah, I'm actually going to go a bit higher than I went on the last one. And I agree that the early part of the show was all video packages and stuff. But to me, that was almost like what we saw in the first show, in that the video packages are like meaningless matches were kind of the same. And I felt like this one at least had that main event, which was the best match that we saw on either show. And it also kind of built to the pay-per-view. So 100% on the weight of the main event, I'm going to give this a 4 out of 10. So just a tad better than the other one.
Yeah, I'm going to go same score as I did the first one. So I'm going to give this one 4 as well. Definitely, like Jake said, on the back of the main event, I thought it was really good. I think, like he said, like the packages here kind of replace the meaningless matches from the first episode. So I definitely agree with pretty much everything that Jake just said. So I'll go 4 out of 10 as well. So I went 4 on both shows tonight. But from here, we'll move on to our awards. Jake, who'd you have as your MVP for tonight?
AJ, easily.
Gotcha. Ben, who'd you have?
AJ.
I gotcha. Lewis?
Yeah, this is a clear AJ one.
Yeah, I'll go AJ as well. LVP, Lewis, who'd you have?
Conan.
I was going to say, there's a million wrong answers on this one. There's only one right one. Yeah. Ben, who'd you have?
2 words, 10 letters. Fuck Conan.
Jake, did you have Conan as well?
Yes, unanimous.
Yeah, I was going to say, since he was featured twice and was absolutely horrible in both, Conan is the layup for tonight. Match of the night, Jake, you going with the main event from this last show?
Yep, definitely.
Everybody going with the main event from this last show?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I figured as much. Moment of the night, Jake, what'd you go with for that?
I'm going to go with that whole post-match of the main event that we just picked for best match, with the whole beatdown and then AJ coming back, firing up on the stretcher and all that whole business.
I got you. Ben, what'd you go with?
Yeah, AJ getting rammed into the chair.
Okay. Lewis, what'd you go with?
I actually went with the surprise win for the Naturals over the champs.
Okay. Yeah, I went with a post-match brawl in the main event as well. Express lane, Lewis, who you have in your express lane tonight? And I said express, so that means going up. Like Sean doesn't listen to me on a previous episode.
People going hey, up, hey, for the first express. Few episodes, I messed that up too.
So express going up. What did you have?
So I don't like saying this, but because of how the shows went, like 3LK did get back-to-back wins, because they had a tech match and a singles match on one show. So 3 wins over 2 shows for members of 3LK. I guess technically that makes them on the way up.
Gotcha. Ben, who'd you have in your express lane tonight?
I can't give it to all 3LK, but I will give it to Truth, who yet again showed us how good he really is.
Yeah,
I gotcha. Jake?
I'm actually going to go with Six Pac as one, because I feel like of the veteran presence we have here, that he could be featured more, because I kind of enjoy when he's in there. And I'll also give it to Abyss, who we're always kind of high on, but I know this is not technically like being presented as like the world title, but it is kind of being portrayed in a main event light. So it's cool to see Abyss kind of elevated into kind of a pseudo main event spot.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, I'm gonna go with Cash for one last time. Obviously he's gonna leave us at this point, so I'll give him one last express lane. But yeah, I definitely thought that Yeah, I definitely thought that he stood out. And then I'll go with Waltman like you just did. He showed out in that first main event. So those guys definitely are on the way up for sure. Exit lane, Jake, I'll stick with you. Who did you have in your exit lane tonight?
The one that really sticks out to me is going to be Apollo. Like, he's just, for somebody who's getting like a pseudo, like kind of a little bit of a push, he's just disappointing every time I see him.
Yeah, there's your Puerto Rican superstar there, Louis. You were talking about bringing people for Puerto Rico. Ben, who'd you have in your exit lane?
Yeah, I got Apollo. You know, the last show that we were on, they were pushing him like as this potential megastar, and now he's been, you know, jobbed out to a guy who's literally leaving the company this very episode. And as always, gentlemen, fuck Conan.
Louis, who'd you have in your exit lane?
I guess the obvious choice would be Kid Cash, but also
technically yes.
Yeah, the job squad for me.
Oh yeah, that's a good pick for sure. I'll definitely have Conan in there. The jobber squad, I could not see them ever again. And yeah, I'm kind of like Ben is with Conan with Apollo. So fuck Apollo, so he can get out of my screen as quickly as possible. But Louis, who'd you have your great value for tonight?
Great value. I have that Lord of Darkness, Prince of Darkness match that they're going to have, that Blindfold match being a great value game of Marco Polo.
Oh, God. I got you. Ben, what'd you have?
I've turned lost track. Well, sorry, look.
Great value.
Oh, great value. I had Lawyer Daggett as a great value wall from 2000 WCW.
Oh, God. Jake, who'd you have?
I'm gonna go with the name TNA Lockdown as great value Skinamax.
Yeah. I was saying, ever since you brought that up, that was definitely gonna be mine. So yeah, I definitely agree with you. That was definitely a real weird way of putting that. So by TNA. So but yeah, that definitely works out for sure. but Jake, I'll stick with you. Do you have anything to plug tonight?
Yeah, I'll plug Ruthless Aggressive, which I did take an episode off due to the same reason I missed the episode of this, but I'll be back. And still some pretty fun stuff going on building the Survivor Series 2002 and the first Elimination Chamber. So check out that pod.
Gotcha. Ben, what you got?
I will quickly plug the latest episode of Wrestling's Mount Rushmore with me, Steve Riddle, Matthew Cook, and Grooney, where we're talking the best ladder matches and best cage matches of all time. And I would just quickly say that list, that shit was recorded like 2 months ago. So the Young Bucks and Blue Lucha Brothers have already made my cage match list obsolete. So thanks a lot, lads, for that.
Yeah, I was just saying, I listened to it and, you know, Grooney was the ultimate disappointment, not having seen any of the good cage matches throughout the years. So, I got to revel in the fact that you had to be on a pod with him and just grovel the whole time.
I tried my best with that hardy loving just to keep my mouth as quiet as I could.
Hey, watch your mouth with that match. That match is good. yeah, but yeah, that show was pretty good to listen to for sure. I've got Popcorn Chicken Salad. We just did Basketball with Matt Souza. We did Wrestling's Chicken Salad. We did our new worst show, which is Fall Brawl 93. As Ben alluded to before we got on here tonight, the show we might watch next month might quickly top it, but we'll see as we get to that next month. From Squared Circle to Silver Screen, me and Roger just did The Princess Bride. It came out the other day, so that's something to listen to if you are looking for something to listen to. But that's all I got right now. As always, thank you guys. Or Louis, where can people follow you? Sorry.
At Louis Maynard on Twitter, at Louis_Maynard on Instagram. And I'll shamelessly plug Dusty's book one more time for him. That's Dusty, Revelations of Wrestling's American Dream, available on Amazon.
For like $807.
The paperback is $809, but I'm sure there's a Kindle version that's a little cheaper.
absolutely absurd. but yeah, that's all the stuff we got going on. Listen to all the pods, all the feeds from the Quadipods that we have. So just all great stuff, all great people. And we will see you next time for the lockdown episode. Straight to the top, but then keep heading up. Stars shine for why we shouldn't give a fuck about what is real and how real is still. The only way to feel the pain that sometimes feels, in a way that survives the struggles we face. In this life, there's a lot of time can't erase. Showcase the skills you were given at birth. Live your life different what it's worth. Show off the style you perfect in life. Show off the way to make it right. Make it to the top of Mount Profession. Roll it until you feel there's nothing more for you to do or say. None of you better get in my way. Coming down, if you do, you'll be back on level ground. Find this to the top. Features that keep your head up high. I am a star that shines for why we should give a pump about life and the way we live both day and night. We are the world's humorous sales. Let's keep it laughing to save ourselves in a way that can read our planet's face. In this life, there's a lot time can't erase. Showcase the skills you were given at birth. Live your life and for what it's worth. Show off the style you perfect in life. Show off the way to make it right. Make it to the top of Mount Probation. Roll it until you feel there's nothing more for you to do or say. None of you better get in my way. Coming down, if you do, you'll be back on level. Modest to the top. Modest at the top. Still modest past the top. If you're tired or thirsty at the top, sleep and drink fast to receive the pop. In a way that stands out for the crowd. In this game there's a lot they won't allow. In a way that survives the struggles we face. In this life there's a lot time can't erase. Showcase the skills you were given at birth. Live your life and for what it's worth. Show off the style you perfect in life. Show off the way to make it right. Make it to the top of Mount Profession. Roll it until you feel nothing more for you to do or say. None of you better get in my way. Coming down, if you do, you'll be back on level ground. Make it to the top of the mountain. Make it there, fight for your body when you bring them. From those enchants of disrespect, I am a son with an alright then. Modest, past the top. Yeah.